On Canucks Central, Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah in the Kintec studio. This hour of Canucks Central brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Let's bring in our next guest, Justin Bourne from Real Kipper and Bourne, which you hear on Sportsnet 650 every day at 2 o'clock Pacific time. Thanks to this, Bourne. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Getting ready for another fantastic hockey game. That was something last night, wasn't it?
God, wasn't that just refreshing? Dude, we deserve that as hockey fans after all the years of waiting.
It's been too long for international hockey. Like, the one thing I guess I should have expected more was that Sidney Crosby was still going to be the best player on the ice, even at age 37.
It was actually funny. I was kicking it around with McKee today, and I was saying, you know, I placed a couple of wagers on the tournament. I took four guys for most points. I took McDavid and McKinnon to pretty decent odds. Took Braden Point as longer odds and Marner to protect myself. So if he wins Kiprios, he doesn't ruin me. At least I get paid. and I was like, how did I forget about Crosby? Sidney Crosby. I feel pretty stupid today.
Well, the thing about Crosby is he just does everything the right way, it seems like. And even Reach and I were talking about the goal in overtime. You can look at it as, okay, overtime, he just throws the puck back and Marner does his thing. But, like there was more to it than that. Like, that's a pretty smart play to freeze the defense the way he did.
You know, it showed on the Mark Stone goal and that goal how cognizant he is of the D's depth. In both cases, he's trying to create bad gaps, right? Like, the one where he's pushing Forsling deep, he kind of hesitates at the blue line, so Forsling slows up, and then he starts to go again, so Forsling's trying to, you know, sort of read what he's going to do, and all the while, Sid's driving him deep so he can make the play back to Stone. That one in overtime, you know, he keeps looking back over his left shoulder and taking snapshots, or, you know, some coaches call it take a Polaroid, so he kind of has an idea where his guys are. Pushes the Sweden D deep again, does the drop, and all of a sudden Marner has ridiculous gap to work with and gets a great shot from a good spot. He's no longer the raw tools guy. He's now the guy who's thinking his way around the ice at a level that no one can come close to.
Yeah, and seeing that first goal, McDavid, McKinnon, Crosby all get on the score sheet right away, it was just like, okay, so this is what we all thought it would look like, and it looks exactly like we all imagined it in our minds. And this really is the story of the tournament for Canada, because, you know, obviously the story coming in is like, oh, U.S. has gotten so much better. Are they going to be the new big dog in the yard? And yet, you know, McDavid, McKinnon, Crosby, they kind of showed us why Canada is so great and reminded us. It's like, hey, you got the three best forwards in the tournament, or among the three best forwards in the tournament, certainly the two best forwards in the tournament. That high end is just going to be hard to match for anybody else.
Yeah. You know, like I mentioned, like when I said we deserve that, it's like I think back to the pandemic and people who watched games with no fans in the stands and stuck with it and the flat salary cap and all that stuff that was really hard. And then to see those three guys all do, you know, the type of thing we hoped we would see in this event. Like, that was like the, if we just get a moment. And then we got it right away, and now we're free to dream on what the next moments can look like, and that's so cool. But, yeah, you know, my one takeaway, you know, about halfway through that game, you know, I was taking notes as it goes along, was just, it looks like McDavid and McKinnon should be playing in a league that's above whatever this level is. Like, it's like, you know, they came back to play, but, you know, it's just like they're ready for whatever's next. And I know there isn't a next, but they are clearly on some sort of tier that no one else can get to.
Well, it's funny because I saw some commentary, and I think it's unfair people being like, well, this shows you who the real good players are. It's like, no, this is like the 0.1% of the best players, right? You can't, like, it's you can't even compare it to anything else, right? And, you know, Reach and I were talking about how on Team Sweden, how many forwards from Team Sweden would make Team Canada's forward group? And it's like maybe a couple, right? But the Americans, like, there's maybe five or six guys that could vie for the team. That's why I'm so excited to watch these two teams go head-to-head on the weekend.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Like, I still feel about Canada's forwards compared to the American forwards, you know, like I would have 15, 20 years ago, where it's just like, I feel like our best guys are just so much better than their best guys. And, you know, you said five or six guys. I love our guys that are in, you know, Braden Point's on the third line for us. You know, it's pretty ridiculous. So I feel good about the forwards. But yeah, definitely you look at the D of the U.S. and the goaltending of the U.S. and it's like, God, you know, it's not just that, you know, they have a few forwards that are elite. It's that I don't think they're going to play on their own end much. And you know, the biggest shame of this whole event, no exaggeration, is Quinn Hughes not being there. And I know in Vancouver they probably disagree, but it sucks that he's not there for the U.S. because it would be so fun for them to have all their guys because it totally changes things. If Hughes is in there for the Americans, like you guys know, how much should they be playing in their own end? You know, you play 30 minutes a game and he has the puck the whole time. So shame they don't get to have that in their arsenal.
Yeah. You know, it's like any team losing a top five player in the league. It would be tough. It would be tough to manage that. And that's where Hughes's level is currently at. So I feel like that's maybe the story going forward for Canada, obviously with the injury to Shea Theodore. How does it look on the back end? I think both Doughty and Parayko had their moments last night, and they were two of the bigger calls that the management group made. Is that going to be the thing that Canada has to overcome moving forward?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, I watched that game, and I felt like a bit of a fool for a couple of things. It's like, Colton Parayko is so good.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how I kind of lost track of that, but he's just so big and long. And I, you know, I went through the fancy stats and they didn't like his minutes last night. And it's like, you know what? Absolutely not. There were several moments where Sweden had the puck in dangerous areas and he nullified it, put the puck in the corner, found a way to break it out. So loved his game and found myself really appreciating a lot of the, you know, the D that you don't watch as closely. I even said in our group chat with Kiprios and Mikiyas, like, if the Leafs 44, that being Riley, were the Jets 44, that being Morrissey, like, they're just a way better team. Morrissey is such a good player. So, yeah, I was impressed with some of those guys. Losing Theodore and having Sanheim come in, the other thing I feel silly about was that I just feel like they kind of overthought the Sanheim thing. I like a lot about why he's there. It makes sense to me. But, like, I would feel better if it were Chris Tanev coming in. I really would, and I would feel better if it were Mackenzie Weegar coming in, and Kiprios liked Brandon Montour quite a bit. So it's like Sanheim is maybe a guy they're trying to, you know, have him around this so for the Olympics he's great or something, but I would feel more secure with someone who's had more experience in big moments, whether internationally or in the NHL.
What did you think of the way Drew Doughty played? Because he looked like he still doesn't look completely right since coming back from his injury.
Yeah, you know, I thought that he looked like himself offensively. He made some plays where you could see that he's, you know, a couple of bounces and he could have had a goal or, you know, a couple assists or whatever last night. So looked good offensively. I thought that defensively, his gaps were really bad. Like he was sagged really deep and you saw it on the Kempe goal. And part of that, I think, is he said post game, that's the fastest game I've ever played in.
Yeah.
And so he's played in multiple gold medal Olympic games. He's played in Stanley Cup finals. That's the fastest game he's ever played in. You know, I think he was, I don't want to say afraid, but very aware of the speed. And to me, looked a little bit shy about it and wanted to back off and not get roasted wide.
The biggest question going into Saturday then is who starts in goal? Do you go with Binnington again, who found his game a little bit in overtime and towards the end of that game, or do you go to Aiden Hill?
It's funny. This is one of those that I thought myself into a corner on when I don't think it's a hard decision. You know, it's like Binnington wasn't great. He, you know, a couple go through him, the first and the second one where you want him to be better. And you've got other goalies there who are equal to him, you know, we think roughly. So, you know, during the game, I was like, I bet it's Hill next game. Sit and think about it for 10 minutes. It's not Hill. They're going to go back to Binnington. It's like, this is the irrationally confident guy who truly believes he's like the best goalie anytime he steps on the ice. He's huge in overtime. Despite those goals, he makes a number of monster saves. Cooper, before that game, said it's not going to be a goalie rotation. There's only four games in this tournament. If things go well, you don't have time for guys to find their game. So Binnington has seen the pace, the pressure, all that at the Bell Center. I can't imagine saying to Aiden Hill, no, you haven't played in a game yet. Here's the Americans on Hockey Night in Canada in Montreal with the country watching, and you know, biggest game of the tournament. I just think Binnington's got his feet wet. Mm-hmm. He played better as the game went on. You got to go back to him and give him a chance to be the guy all the way through.
This is such a short tournament that it's hard to underrate a single game because, I mean, the results matter so much. But based on what we saw from Sweden, do they look like a team that could still win this? Or do you have some doubts, especially if guys like Elias Pettersson are not going to find that level?
Yeah, you know, I think so. I think they could still, you know, winning is probably unlikely, but God, they got a point. Like, could they beat the Americans? For sure. It's just a matter of, you know, that defense is so good for me. Forsling's so good defensively. Ekholm's so good defensively. Hedman can do it both ways. They just are really solid. I even like Rasmus Andersson a lot. So good there. And then their goaltending's very, very good. So, you know, you just need a couple of guys to have a game. This Kempe is probably an underrated player. Nylander is going to get breakaways. Like, it's just going to happen. He can shoot a couple in the net. So you get good D and a couple guys who can break it open. Absolutely. I said to someone who was asking me about, you know, could these other teams win the other day? It's like, if you look at the Blackhawks schedule this year, they've beat Washington, Vegas, Dallas, Edmonton, like all the best teams. Anyone in the NHL, you know, in hockey, you can win on any night if you get the right goaltending and bounces. So don't count them out.
You know, there's still enough talent in that forward group. Obviously, Bratt, Lucas Raymond looked good last night. I felt Nylander does his thing. But I feel Sweden is maybe going to have a similar problem to the Canucks in that you need – Elias Pettersson was fine last night. Like, I don't think he was bad. I don't think – but I don't think he was great. Yeah, was he all that noticeable? That's kind of how we felt for a lot of Canucks games this year. Yeah. It's like you need – because Zibanejad's game is where it is at his age, Eriksson Ek and Lindholm are fine as centermen in the bottom six. But, you know, if you're going to go up against Eichel and Matthews and whomever else in this tournament, he's got to be a number one setter. He's got to be a game breaker. That's just, it's not where his game has been. It's the most baffling story of the last 12 months in all of hockey.
You know, the Leafs guys, because we cover them really closely, have had stretches like this, and it was right after Nylander signed his contract. He really struggled for a long time. Not this recent one, but the 6.9 one.
Right.
And same thing with Marner after he's signed this deal, which he's now wrapping up. He was bad for a while. And then Matthews had a year 2 years ago and then kind of this year where I feel about those guys then, like I feel about Pettersson now, which is it's not like you watch them and say they had a bad game. They made bad plays. They're playing bad. What's bad is the absence of greatness.
Yeah.
And they are great players. And you're like, he's been fine. Where are those things that made you go, oh, other people can't do that?
Mm-hmm.
And so Pettersson in that game last night, no joke. It was like the late second period. I was like, oh God, yeah, Pettersson's on Sweden. Like I had a moment where he had the puck and I was like, oh, he's in this game. You know, so he certainly, you know, Kempe, every time he had the puck, I felt like I noticed him. And that certainly wasn't the case for Petey.
Well, and even Erik Karlsson, for all the criticism he gets, I mean, the play he makes to get the puck to Kempe on that goal, it's like a play that a few players can actually make, right? So even, you know, so I get how people can criticize Karlsson all they want, but he can still make a magical play happen at a big moment.
And wouldn't you rather take he's really elite good and sometimes really bad than just kind of okay? just give me the moments, give me the highs at least, because then we can work on the other stuff. But if you can't reach those highs, it gets really tough to believe that, you know, it's going to happen again. And I will say, for the guys I mentioned that were like that in the Leafs, they did find it again. It is there for Petey. He didn't suddenly get bad. So I don't know what it takes to get there. I don't have those answers, but it is certainly within him, and that's what makes it so frustrating.
Yeah, it must be like wild for guys that are on teams in the basement of the NHL to show up into this tournament and be like, ooh, hockey's fun again. It's
like, how great.
How great.
He's loving life.
We're not just like counting down the days till April. This is fun again. I feel like that for a lot of the teams that are kind of in the tank, but I got to ask a question about how Leafs Twitter reacted to Mitch Marner scoring a big goal in a big game.
Mm-hmm.
About as you would expect, or what?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I feel like a lot of guys are, like McKee is sort of my weather vane on this stuff. He's just excited to have a reason to root for Marner, like to be like, okay, maybe it's within him. If maybe he's finding it in his older years and maybe that's to come. for the Leafs. So I think those people are holding on to the hope. Then there's the people who've written him off entirely who are like, oh, weird, he did it during 3-on-3. Like, you know, he's the guy who can't find space in the playoffs, suddenly gets space and he's good again. You know, it's so some people not taking it as seriously, maybe as, I don't know, as others. So I think it probably lies somewhere in between that. But I do think it's good for him to have moments like this and feel what it's like to have come through in the clutch. Sometimes he errs on the side of defensive responsibility in big moments. So hopefully this is a reminder to go the other way, too, and help at that end of the rink.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see ultimately how it goes. It all comes down to what you do in the postseason. But one thing that became clear yesterday when the NHL and NHLPA with Marty Walsh and Gary Bettman meeting with the media, saying that there will every 2 years either be a World Cup of Hockey or Olympic participation. And if we're going to get a steady dose of best-on-best hockey for, you know, decades to come, it's going to reframe how we view these things, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. And I mean, there's a lot, it's another element for us in the media, because it's every 2 years, as seasons are going on, you're kind of constantly keeping tabs on who's in, who's out for our Canadian teams. Yeah. And one thing I've been told by the PA is, you know, the rosters are going to be bigger than these rosters. So, you know, you expand it to 14 forwards and 8D. You know, you start to get into some pretty interesting names of and debates about who's in there, how you want the team to take shape, and, you know, what sort of specialist do you want in there. Real easy to watch that game last night and not be able to score at times and think, God, wouldn't Mark Scheifele have helped? Or, you know, maybe Zach Hyman would have helped in the forecheck or whatever. I think it's a fun element, and I like with it when it's every 2 years, you don't miss anyone's crest. Yeah. You know, like sometimes you just have a guy peak and then not be good at the right time. So I think it's fun for everyone. I just think that we haven't had it in so long adds extra juice to this event because the players wanted it so badly and it's finally here.
Probably easier to get guys to commit to like a once in a lifetime experience in the Olympic Village than hanging out in a hotel room in Montreal or Boston and waiting for their chance.
Italy too. It's like, yeah, I mean, can you ask for a better experience than that? So yeah, easy sell.
Yeah.
By the way, I think Canadians are going to hold a grudge against Pietrangelo. That might hurt him in a couple years' time. Because watching that game last night, it's like, one of our guys just chose not to be here, and that doesn't sit well.
Definitely won't sit well for some. Borny, always appreciate the time. Thanks so much for this today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Talk to you soon.
There he is, Justin Bourne, Real Kipper and Bourne. You hear it on Sportsnet 650 every day at 2 o'clock, their national hour here on Sportsnet 650.
Yeah. I mean, it's always great chatting with him. I mean, he knows the game so well. And, you know, just made a great point about Crosby on the goals and the plays he makes and how he manipulates space. And I think...
destroys the defense's gap.
Yeah, it's essentially. He's a different level, man. You know, and just seeing guys do stuff like that, it goes to beyond just what you do with the puck and how you shoot the puck and how you pass the puck. It's how you try to manipulate players and where you want them to go and where you want them to not go and how you're able to do that at that level. Especially with the pace of the game being what it is. I mean, I'm just glad he has this moment again because I think because of how bad the Penguins have been and we haven't seen him in the playoffs for a couple of years now, we've kind of forgotten what Crosby is and can be.
Well, and that's the thing about, you know, this the situation the Penguins find themselves in, like a bunch of guys in Chicago or San Jose, and it's like, you might be a good veteran player, but... I don't blame you if your motivation lets up, if your competitive level, your competitive drive lets up because your team is like no chance of making the playoffs the second you show up to training camp.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of hard. Like, you know that, okay, we're grinding out 82 games. I'm a vet. I'm locked into a contract for the next 4 years anyways. Like, yeah, I want to put up numbers and do some things, but it's just, it's different the way your motivation would no doubt be different. It's just it's natural human reaction, I feel like. So you get Crosby back into this setting and you could see how jacked up he is to really take advantage.
Well, and I think that's also the beauty of having these best on best that matter. If you have it every 2 years, even players that don't get to be on that stage because of issues with their teams or whatever their circumstances are, here's a chance to get the best collection of players and see how they play, and you have a real rooting interest for them. And the thing about international soccer, which is awesome, is like you follow your national team mm-hmm. through everything, even friendlies and all these other tournaments along the way and qualification for these events. And it matters, like you're invested into yeah. it. And then you're super invested in whether it's the regional championships, right? Like whether it's like, you know, the Euro or whatever it is, or the World Cup, of course. But it's like this big cycle with this huge national pride and investment into the national team that's consistent year in and year out. Well, that's what's going to happen if you have the Olympics and the World Cup of Hockey every 2 years.
Yeah.
And like Bourne spoke about, if you're having players constantly be under evaluation and constantly part of like Team Canada summer camps, which will probably they'll do in the off year probably to have the guys get together, because now you're building a national program again that's always consistently together, and your rooting interest is going to be consistent. And even if a player is on a team like the Penguins that's going to be bad for, say, a decade, and it's Sidney Crosby still for a few years, at least we still get to see him on some of the biggest stages in the world.
Yeah. Loud Titans fan says, there is no way Crosby plays this hockey and goes back to doing nothing in Pittsburgh and wasting his career. He'll be gone at some point.
I mean, let's hope so. I know
he's answered that question very differently in the past.
No, he has. We'll see what happens. I know what Loud Titans fan is getting at. He's trying to talk about a Crosby to Vancouver trade.
Oh, yeah. So. Well, I mean, we started that, didn't we?
If we say it often enough, it'll happen.
It'll happen, yes.
USA Finland is coming up. We'll keep you updated on what happens there, of course. Canucks had a couple of players, a couple of skaters that were supposed to be in the tournament for Team USA. Now there are none. JT Miller still there. Quinn Hughes dropped out due to injury. Stan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Landon Ferraro is going to join us. His take on Team Canada and what he saw out of Elias Pettersson for Team Sweden last night as well. That's coming up next on Sportsnet 650.
Discussing the biggest stories that matter to Vancouver sports fans. Halford and Brough in the morning. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Two here on Canucks Central. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah in the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. USA Finland about to get going at the Four Nations face-off. You can watch on Sportsnet, stream on Sportsnet Plus. We'll keep you updated on what happens there. Let's bring in our next guest. It is Landon Ferraro, Canucks analyst, joins us here every Thursday on Canucks Central. Were you hockey geeking it up last night like pretty much everybody else was watching Canada-Sweden?
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, they couldn't have started any better, too.
Right, yeah.
Like, you feel like a little kid all over again.
Yeah, and thank you for the high stick, Nylander, right?
Seriously. But no, it was awesome, and it got even better when Sweden started fighting back and you know, it made a game. And no, it's everything that we all wanted it to be, or at least that's how I feel.
Out of all the players on Team Canada, if you had to choose one player to be your line mate, who would you choose?
Well, I mean, the way Crosby played again, geez, I mean, I'm probably taking him. Like, everywhere he goes, he's just putting it on a dime. Like, he's just throwing dimes around. Like, it was unbelievable. So, no, I mean, I'd take him. I could always skate, so at least I could get to the other end. But, I mean, he's the one that's making plays happen, so I'm taking that. But, you know, again, like, you know, McDavid is McDavid. Like, he was flying around, especially that first period. Then MacKinnon got moving. Like, it was honestly kind of hard to watch how fast it was moving back and forth. And you're like, I kind of just kept laughing at what, you know, I've been waiting to see, like, the two fastest guys with so much skill going at it together, and especially overtime.
It's, you know, we've been gushing about the three Crosby assists, and I think we've come to a consensus that our favorite of the assists was the overtime one, because when do you ever see a guy gain the offensive blue line and then drop the puck back? It's just like, it never really happens. It froze everybody on Team Sweden, and Marner's just got all the space in the world to come in at full tilt and go in for that goal. It was just, I mean, it was remarkable. He's like, he's moving the chess pieces around the board the way he wants to.
Yeah, and, like, the other impressive part of that is, like, he takes a pretty long turn down there and then gets out onside. But like, he understood with how far back he was, I'm fine here. Like, just having that amount of awareness and not sprinting out. Like, he just kind of, like, he was skating hard, but like, he knew he was fine. Like, just that alone. But no, I honestly, I'd agree with you, because there's no way I could ever imagine getting over the blue line in overtime and then throwing it two lines behind me.
No,
like, I wouldn't have known the guy was there, but like, again, like, just watching the hockey IQ of those guys and all of it, it was great.
Well, and I think just with Crosby, like, we just can't say enough about him. We spoke to Bourne about him as well, and just, you know, how good he still is at this age, and the fact that he just looks so rejuvenated. And if the Penguins aren't going to be good, and if he's going to be committed to the Penguins, like, we got to get him into as many international competitions as possible before he hangs them up.
100%. Like, that's all I was thinking about last night as you're watching him do his thing. And it was just like, man, I need to see him play in big games and be in playoffs again. Like, you know, it's obviously his decision. It's his life, and he's more than earned whatever decision he wants to make. But the thought of him going to a different team and having a chance to compete again is just the best. Like, he elevates his game even farther. He finds a way, you know, he's the oldest player in the tournament, and he finds a way to be the most effective player in the first game instantly. Like, it's just, again, like, it's his hockey IQ, the way that he, you know, can he keep up to McDavid and MacKinnon flying around? But no one can. But like, he knows what's happening. He's setting it up. Like you said it earlier, like it's chess. Like, he knows where the pieces are moving, and he knows how to get to the right spot and lay some pretty unbelievable passes out there as well.
I know the cynics felt like, oh, it's just going to be a glorified all-star tournament, and that's the way that it's going to play out. I mean, you played for Canada. You wore the Canadian jersey. You were at the Olympics in 2022, and my argument was, coming into the tournament, there's no way these guys can wear their country's colors and not give it their all, not have their competitive juices going, and that's exactly what we saw in that first game.
Exactly. Like, there's no way that these guys don't get into it. And like, as much as like 100%, like, they're playing for their country, and you can see how much it all means to them, but like, their ego's involved too. And you know, you can have the NHL side, but like, the international resume is a completely different thing. And to be a guy that's known for, you know, like, massive Olympic moments, like, all those guys, for the most part, you know, like, at one of their parts where they're watching hockey with the most passion was, you know, when they're teenagers and younger kids, and like, they're watching Crosby put that goal in. They remember that more than anything he's done with the Penguins, just because it's Team Canada, it's the Olympics, it's international hockey. Like, it's elevated. Like, everyone wants to have that as well and be able to put those in, and you don't get many chances, so you have to take advantage of any time you get to put on that jersey.
Well, and I think if the World Cup of Hockey does happen consistently for a decade, is it going to take as great an import almost as the Olympics?
For sure, well, because for every second year, you know, you're 2 years out from the next Olympics, and it's essentially another tryout. It's another time for, you know, like, obviously they're playing games and everyone watches, and their, you know, coaches are coaching against the guys that are going to be on the team. But like, when you have those players, you know, around you, and you have them in a tournament, you get to know them better. You get to know things that you like about them, things you don't like that you didn't know before. So like, anytime you get with your national team, like, as much as you're there to win that tournament, you're playing for the next one as well. And like, that's why I knew, like, I just couldn't believe that this tournament wasn't going to be, you know, with emotion and hitting and everything in it. Like, again, like, they're a year away from the Olympics. Like, some of these guys, if they don't play well, like, they could play themselves out of it and someone else jumps in for next year. Like, there's so much more to it as well.
Yeah, and you played in Germany. You know, Gary Bettman mentioned he wants eight nations to play in the World Cup, and I think we're still ironing out the details on how all that's going to work without double IHF approval just yet, but you know, like, we're seeing more German players come into the league. We're seeing, you know, it become more of a global game. More of these countries in Europe produce more players at the highest level. I mean, having another big international tournament is only going to help that, is it not?
Exactly, and especially as all the other nations have gotten better and they've figured out what works for them in developing players and the system that they use. Like, the Germans use a very different system for development than Canadians do. You know, it's all through their club teams. Like, I played for the Kölner Haie in Cologne, and it's like soccer. Like, you have youth teams all the way down to learning to skate.
Yeah.
And all the gear is supplied, and, you know, like, it works very different. Now more kids can play. So, like, they're catching up because they have, you know, a bunch of kids that are able and wanting to. But no, like, all those tournaments are big. Like, I mean, Cologne is Leon Dreisaitl. It's where he's from. And, like, all those kids idolize him. When he's skating there in the summer, like, they're on the glass. Like, they're watching. You know, it's the same as when I was younger and I'd go to, you know, Eight Rinks or Scotiabank, whatever it's called down there now. But, you know, I'd get there and all the pros were skating in the group in front of me. Like, I was glued to the glass. Like, you had an example in front of you. All those nations haven't had examples. Maybe there's one or two guys, but now there's multiple guys playing at one time. It's not just an outlier anymore.
Well, and if you look at the game having to grow, if you look at Europe, and I think people would be surprised to how many people play hockey in Europe, and even in countries that are maybe not known as hockey powers, like, and even in Austria, for instance, there are a lot of people, kids that do play hockey, and Switzerland, people love hockey in Switzerland as well. It's just, I think there needs to be a bit more moments of inspiration globally to get some more kids playing, because as much as we're looking at North America, like, we're kind of tapped out of North America almost. Some of the growth has to happen outside of this continent.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, like, and it is about getting, like, I think it's more important for, you know, for they get the World Cup going and they get the IIHF into it. Like, I think it's more important for it to be in Europe first. Like, you need to get on their time zone. Like, they're doing a good job on Saturday of doing the early game so that everyone in Finland and Sweden can watch. Like, that's awesome. But again, like, all those kids that are around Europe, like, they don't really get to watch any NHL hockey. They watch highlights, but it's the middle of the night. So if you can get it onto their time, they'll watch. They'll be there. Like, Europeans travel to any sporting event that they can get to. Like, they'll get to wherever they put it. And then you'll have all those kids seeing that, all those people getting excited and getting more into it. Like, I think that's huge.
So the other part of last night's game that has the Canucks angle to it is Elias Pettersson's play. And now, as we talked,
I thought you were going to say Tocchet's coaching. I was more excited about that conversation.
Well, you know, we'll get there. It wasn't all just dump and chase, right? So Tocchet was trying to get them to dump and chase, but John Cooper said, no, we're doing it differently here, Tocchet. Kidding aside, Elias Pettersson, and, you know, it just felt like similar to a lot of what we've seen from Pettersson all year long, where it's like there's nothing really all that bad defensively. He was fine. But you're looking for a game-breaking moment that just never really materialized for him last night.
Yeah, it was more of the same. Like, the hard part in all of this conversation it's basically been a year of this, of, like, the hard part is that he's playing good. For just being a player, like, he's good defensively. He creates once in a while. The issue is that, you know, he's way better and he's paid to be way better and it's not there. So, like, again, last night he was fine, but there's opportunities in the game where a guy of his skill level and status, like, that's where they take things over. And there's no better example of one of the few times that he had the puck was the 2-on-1 that he ends up turning away and throwing it back up top. Like, he stopped skating before the tops of the circles. Like, if he just keeps driving, I can't remember who the other D was. It might have been Doughty that was playing the 2-on-1. But he basically went right over to the pass, to the guy that could get the pass. Like, Pettersson had a lane to the net. All he had to do was skate, and he's there. But all of a sudden, within 3 seconds, the puck's at the point. You know, like, those are the things where you see them and it just instantly, it doesn't matter what steps he's been taking. You see that and you're like, that's just not the confidence of this star right now. Like, there's no way, if that's William Nylander, that he's not going to the net there.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, and I think a lot of it comes down to the lack of power in his game. It also comes kind of comes down to who you have to play with him. And if he's not going to find that burst until next year and needs another offseason to get there, I think his line mates really do matter in terms of the type of pace they have if they're going to play next to him. And Philip Forsberg kind of struggled last night. And if I'm looking at his best situation with the Canucks, and he looked pretty good with Sherwood and DeBrusk, of course, the other night. But I think you really need to have pace on his wings as long as he doesn't have that power in his game, at least skating wise.
Yeah, like I don't disagree with you. Like, I think it's, you know, you brought it up, like, it's why Sherwood plays pretty good with him is because he can go do a lot of the work. But like with the example I just said of last night with the 2-on-1, like, that has nothing to do with power and legs though. Right, like, he's just skating, if he just kept skating the same pace that he was skating, Makar wasn't catching him, he would have got a stick in there, but like, he would have got to the net. But it's like, it's in his head right now that you, like, you need to drive, you need to just take when the ice is there. Like, that goes back to what Tockett was talking about when Colorado came into town, and he was talking about MacKinnon. He said the thing that he liked about him the most was anytime he saw open ice on the interior, he takes it. Well, that's a prime example. Like, it doesn't have, it's not like he has to put his head down and grind his way there. Like, there's a clear lane. That's a mentality. It doesn't matter who your line mates are. If you have that opportunity, you have to take it.
Yeah, and even if you think about the Mark Stone goal, we talked about this with Justin Bourne, and Crosby drives Forsling deep into the zone, creating a lot more space for Mark Stone to skate into and get that chance, and lo and behold, it's a goal. But if you're not moving your feet, you're not creating those kinds of chances. But it did look good for Pettersson against the Leafs last Saturday, right? He threw that big reverse hit and then had later in that shift the great pass to Hronek at the back door. And just, you know, because we haven't talked since last week, Canucks finished going into the break 6-1-1. Breath of fresh air with a couple of new guys into the roster with Drew O'Connor and Philip Hedl. They play a lot faster. You're going to get Hughes back after the break. There's a lot of things to be positive about when things return from this Four Nations break, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Like, it was night and day the last couple weeks, especially obviously when the trade happened moving forward. Like, it's a completely different feel talking about the team, hearing people talk about the team. It looks completely different. They're playing more energetic, more north. I mean, the players they brought in Hedl and O'Connor especially have been helping that. You know, they're using their speed, they're driving the net, getting pucks below the goal line, doing, you know, making plays. It's been good. And then obviously with Marcus Pettersson coming in, like, as soon as he was inserted into that lineup, and again, like, a big piece of that too is the younger Pettersson on the back end. Like, both those pieces kind of came in at the same time, but Marcus especially, like, things just calmed down in their own end. They started making or started gathering, you know, a bunch of defensive zone exits with control, coming up with speed, attacking. Like, it just looked completely different, and calling that game against the Leafs, like, it was fun. Like, there was excitement in the building again.
Yeah, and I think that's something that has been lacking. And, you know, a lot of the home fans have been beaten down with some poor performances too. So it's nice to see them have some real fun ones heading into the Four Nations break. But, and one thing that has been really evident the last few games is how they're playing the way the coach has spoken about them playing. And there's been a lot of discussion, as you know, Landon, especially from fans and even some people analyzing game, that Tockett isn't getting enough out of this group, that he's too rudimentary with how he goes about preaching the game and how they need to play. But now we're seeing them far better with controlled zone entries, better with exits. And how much of that simply comes down to having guys like O'Connor and Hedl, who all of a sudden through their four games are clear of any other Canuck players when it comes to zone entries and zone exits. Like, how much of it just comes down to having the personnel to play the right way and what the coach is trying to get out of these players?
Yeah, like, for Tockett's type of play, like, you need to be a good skater. And, like, to have that much pressure, wanting it, getting in on the forecheck and playing with a bunch of energy, like you need to be able to cover ice. And they brought in two players that can get through the neutral zone rather quickly. And then by doing that, like, you know, what you were saying earlier of, you know, with how Tocchet wants him to play, and, you know, everyone kind of had the feeling that he was stifling it a bit. Like, I think that, like, he's laid a very good blueprint, and, like, this is what he wants the Bones to look like. But you can find your own little arteries coming around it. Like, you can make up, once you get into the zone, like, have some creativity, drive the net if you can. And, you know, again, like, it's with a couple new guys coming in and just playing and other guys seeing it. Now, all of a sudden, you know, Höglander had a couple good net drives. Suter was around the front. Like, guys are starting to get in there more consistently. And it just needs that visual, you know, kind of example again, and not just video, but one of the guys doing it, you know, just seeing it right there. I'm like, okay, well, he just got there. I can do that too. Like, just any of that, it helps. Like, it sounds so simple, but it helps.
And on defense, Marcus Pettersson. I think we all did a bit of a double take when we saw the cost it was going to take to get Marcus Pettersson here to Vancouver. Signs the contract almost immediately. But, I mean, the early returns are it's settled your top four. You drop Quinn Hughes back into that top four with the way Pettersson and Myers have looked as a shutdown pair. You put Hughes and Hronek back together. It's like now you're talking about a top four that, you know, can rival some of the other teams here in the Western Conference.
Yeah, like, and that was the best part. You know, we were talking about it in the postgame last week, but at the same time, like, it's already so much better on the back end. And then you got to keep reminding yourself that Quinn Hughes is going back into that. Like, it already took a massive step forward in just the way that they defend, the way that they skate, the way that they advance the puck. Like, it is a big change. And then you're going to drop in a Norris winner that is right on track again. So, you know, for the Canucks, like, it went from a real weak point. And seeing that player, and, you know, Marcus Pettersson coming in and seeing how much it helped almost just highlighted how much more they needed that than we even knew. Mm-hmm. Really, like, everyone knew we needed, like, the Canucks needed another defenseman, but seeing that guy get dropped in and what it actually did, like, I don't think anyone realized how much it was going to help. And so he gets the early return right away with the contract, but you can see exactly how it's going to work, and it looks good, and it's not an issue moving forward.
Yeah, and I think as far as the defense is concerned, I mean, you could always use another really good defenseman, but because of the cap being what it is, because it needs to add to the forward group, which we'll get to in a second, you still have to have guys come in and play cheap, and that's where Elias Pettersson comes in, Tom Vilander comes in, but it feels like the defense, at least for the time being, is complete, and they have the internal solutions, or at least the internal options to see it through for at least next year and see kind of where it goes. But if the defense is more or less set for this year and maybe even beyond for the next little while, are they one forward away, like one impact forward away from at the very least making it interesting if they get to the playoffs this year?
Yeah, like, I think they're still missing a bit of a score, right? Like, just another guy. I'm not saying another, you know, another 35, 40 goal guy, but, you know, someone that can add, you know, some big goals and big moments. Like, you know, essentially, the way Sherwood started the year, and now being back with Pettersson, how I think his offense will pick back up a little bit. Like, another just secondary piece, because then if they can skate and move a bit as well, because as soon as they get that, again, like, they get pretty deep pretty quick. And if they can be that four-line team right now and not have to give up a ton to make that work, so it, you know, helps a little bit moving forward. Like, again, like, they got a team that is playing with some new life now, so it'll be interesting to see coming out of the break and how they play for the first week or so, just to kind of see where they're at that point as well.
Landon, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks for this.
Yeah, have a good one, guys.
There he is, Landon Ferraro, joining us here on Canucks Central. And yeah, I mean, it feels like a lot's happened since last Saturday, but a lot to be positive about with the new additions to the Canucks and what it looked like. Of course, not a finished product, but you know, for the first time in a while, it feels like the Canucks defense is at least settled for the time being. Like what you have in the top four, and for as much as you'd like to still see a couple of other elements or maybe have a stronger third pair, I mean, the top four is what really matters, and it looks like it's settled right now.
Yeah, and as far as spending assets and budget, you really can't. You could trade for another top four defenseman and upgrade on Myers, but is that the best use of your resources when you have guys like Villander coming potentially? Mancini's in the fold now. Like you have DPD on the left side. Like you have some guys that need to come up and get a chance before you, I think, look to perhaps add another guy via trade. And I think you're fine in that regard. But the forwards, like I'm not saying you're one forward away from being a Stanley Cup contender, but I think you become more interesting. And I think one thing we haven't really discussed a ton this year, because the Canucks have struggled so much, relatively speaking, is the league is wide open this year.
Yeah.
It's not even so much about how good your team is. Your team needs to be as good as the rest of the competition. And the level, the ceiling required to be interesting in the playoffs is not as high as it was last year.
Yeah.
And that's where it's like, okay, I'm not saying you're going to win the cup this year if you add another forward, but I think it makes it interesting.
Yeah.
Like you could be an interesting team with good defense if they get healthy, good goaltending, right? Like if you get another guy, give yourself a chance to do something.
They have a lot of the elements, but they are desperately missing an impact forward.
Yes. Well, and obviously Pettersson, which is the big, you know, elephant in the room, like he has to come alive.
Pettersson aside, like you need Pettersson no matter what.
No matter what.
Like, yeah. So adding one impact forward and that really making a difference is also with the mind that Pettersson eventually figures it out.
Yeah.
But if you add one impact forward and settle your top six a little bit more, now you're talking. Because like the one thing, of course, you know, Edmonton's got McDavid and Draisaitl, and Colorado's got what they've got, and you know, Vegas has a really good top gear as well, especially with the way that the Jack Eichel has played this season. But you have Quinn Hughes.
Yeah.
Like you also have a top five player in the league that can take over a shift, take over a game when he is really at that level. So you have that gear from a player on your roster, but you still need a couple of other guys to be able to push with him. And that's really what the Canucks are missing right now.
So I think if the Canucks, like two things, I think if you add to this forward group, they become very interesting. And I know we got to go here because we got overrated and underrated coming up in a second. But if you get another impact forward to move Sherwood down to playing your bottom six,
yeah,
or even O'Connor, whichever one, like depending on who you get, and then getting somebody that can really win a face-off and be good defensively and play some matchup minutes down the middle. And I think you can find something like that in a rental. If you make that impact move, like I think if you make those two moves, add another defensive stopper and add an impact forward, it can be interesting.
Yeah.
Like you have my attention come playoff time.
But of course, need Elias Pettersson to be a little bit better.
And you have to make the playoffs.
That I'm back to like being pretty confident.
Oh yeah. Back on team playoffs.
I mean,
what percentage?
I don't think I was ever really out because I was never really in on Calgary.
Okay.
Right?
How about we do it in overrated, underrated? Overrated, underrated, the Canucks playoff chances.
Canucks missing the playoffs?
Missing the playoffs.
Yeah. All right. We'll kick overrated, underrated off that way. Denny's True North Taste awaits with Denny's 100% Canadian beef burgers made with new shredded iceberg lettuce on a brioche bun and all the classic ingredients you love. Denny's. It's Canadian. Overrated, underrated. Coming up next on Sports at 650.